Welcome back. Muslims in North America are struggling with two challenges. On the one hand, we continue to hear reports of young Muslims turning to extremism, leaving us shocked and at a loss. On the other hand, we're facing an unprecedented rise of Islamophobia that makes many Muslims feel like outsiders in their own country. We recently talked to a Muslim leader who is battling on both of these fronts. Shahina Siddiqui is Executive Director of the Islamic Social Services Association in Winnipeg. She recently visited Toronto for Being Me, an all-women's conference. We discussed her work in combating extremism and Islamophobia. Here is our interview now. Welcome to the show, Shahina.
Thank you.
So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit, you know, you're the president and founder of the Islamic Services Association. You're a leader in the Canadian Muslim community. And as of late, you've been doing a lot of, awareness and work around the conversation of extremism. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, in your experience and from your perspective, to what extent is that an actual or real threat to not only the Muslim community, but the broader community as well?
Well, extremism is always a concern, and especially when it involves youth, because they don't have the ability to process through it. So I think it's been there in any community, but right now the focus seems to be on the Muslim community. And yes, it is a concern. I wouldn't say it's a big threat. I wouldn't want it exaggerated. But yes, it's a concern, especially because some of our youth have gone overseas, have been drawn into these hate ideologies, and they're either they kill or they get killed, which of course is a very traumatic experience for the family that's left behind, for the community in general. So I would say yes, it is a concern, and we are doing things to address it.
So I know one of the things that you did with your organization was release the United Against Terrorism Handbook, and I know you just mentioned that it's not, from your perspective, it's not that big of a threat. It is a threat. So what was the thinking behind, you know, when you released this handbook, what was it, what were some core issues you were trying to address with that?
The handbook actually came out of a town hall meeting where 200
oh, wow.
members attended, and we had the RCMP, we had the police, we had scholars and activists all present, and we had all cultural communities within the Muslim community in Manitoba present, and we did conversation cafes around three themes. One was understanding the extremist message and coming up with a counter-narration to it. The second was understanding how law enforcement works in this area and what questions people had. And the third one was knowing your civil liberties and rights and
so
responsibilities.
So it was just a gathering to get people together and have a conversation?
Just to get together and ask questions. So that the panels could answer them. We also had the RCMP do a presentation for parents to understand what kind of extremist websites were out there and what kind of damage and harm there and how they could protect their children. So out of that, when we collected all the questions, of course everything could not be answered in one night, even though we had the session from almost 6 o'clock to midnight.
Wow, you didn't answer everything then?
I mean, was still not able to answer everything. Absolutely. So we realized there was a need. And when I started talking to my colleagues across North America, they said they've been hearing the same questions. So we thought, okay, let's put it together. So I approached NCCM, National Council of Canadian Muslims, who were part of that town hall, and RCMP, and said, can we do this? And we all thought that was a great idea. So it took 14 months to put it together.
Wow. To
answer. And remember, many a times when we talk about counter-narrative to extremist messaging, the counter-narrative is very academic. Or it's very scholarly, and we wanted to do something that could reach the common person, right? Parents
yes.
could understand it, youth could understand it. And so it was a labor of love, but it was hard work. So that's the place where it started, and it ended up in that handbook, which since then has become quite infamous.
it's astounding. I didn't know it was done in 14 months, so that's definitely a huge accomplishment.
Yeah.
So I know that you guys work closely with the NCCM, and you also worked with the RCMP, but I know that, the RCMP, and I think an article that I was reading, they mentioned that they only contributed to a certain portion of it, and they're not, you know, they sort of said that they're not really a part of the rest of it, and I think they had pulled out at the last minute. So what was your, I mean, were you expecting that? And what sort of how has that now affected the relationship?
Mm. Well, I am on the board of NCCM, and I'm on the commissioner's RCMP committee.
Wow.
And
so
the
you're
D division committee. So you know, I've had my different hats that I wear, but definitely it was a surprise because we had no inclination, no indicator that RCMP had any issue with it.
And they were working with you throughout the process.
Throughout,
right?
I mean, the drafts were going through and fro. And the other thing is, the disclaimer is already on the handbook, so we couldn't see an issue with it. Because of course, I can't speak for the RCMP portion of it, and I don't expect them to speak. And so we had put the disclaimer on it.
What did the disclaimer just say?
It says that all contributors are only responsible for their section. So NCCM is for them, ESET mm-hmm. for us, and so forth, which is a standard practice.
Yeah.
So we only found out the night before. I got an email from our CEO saying there is some issue at NHQ. We'll talk about it. I'm just still trying to get to the bottom of it. I said, fine. And then the morning of, I think a couple of hours before the press conference, CEO called and he says, we can't participate in the press conference. I said, well, it's going to go through anyway because it's our handbook. It isn't an RCMP handbook. And that was odd. So we had the press conference and whatnot. And then the next day, RCMP put out a statement saying that they had, because the media was hounding, some issue with some elements which had an adversarial note. So again, it wasn't very clear what the issue was. And to this day, I don't know what the issue was. Yes, they didn't come to the press conference, but they're still part of the handbook. And they did an excellent job on their part. So that's the scoop on it.
Did you find that, you know, I know that that has happened, but looking back now, do you find that you're still able to work closely together and address the issue of
absolutely,
extremism?
Absolutely. I still sit on the two committees. And we just did a training with Daniel Kohler from Germany on de-radicalization,
wow,
family counseling, and RCMP and police were both part of that training. They are part of our team that will be working on this. Their aspect is only when it reaches a point we need to inform or we need to get them involved, and that's different. But they will not be part of the actual counseling, which we would mm-hmm. be doing with family. And as I said, we have an excellent relationship with them.
Okay, so it's great to hear, because I know in another article you talked about, mm-hmm. I think when there was something about extremism and you mentioned that it's a concern, not just for, and it's not, I think you mentioned something like it's not Muslims against, it's humanity against
terrorism.
So it's really refreshing to hear that, you know, they're continuing, you're finding that that's actually being done in practice, because I know sometimes as a Muslim watching it from the outside, you often feel like an outsider.
I think we react rather than work. We burn our bridges because we are emotional or upset about things. We had an option of getting emotional and upset and saying, we want to have nothing to do with the RCMP, but nobody would benefit from it, right?
Yes.
So you have to take a long-term view, and you have to have some hikmah in your relationship, knowing that politics plays a role in this, knowing that institutions are for all Canadians, not just for certain Canadians. So you can't break your relationship with your institutions. You have to build them. You have to also know that when it comes to politics, sometimes their hands are tied as well. So you have to have that treetop view of affairs rather than under the tree affair.
So it's very, very good that you mentioned that, because now I want to talk a little bit about how you deal with the politics. So recently you were called to give a recent testimony at the Senate Committee on National Security and Defense. Now, give us a little bit of backstory. I'll go into, you know, the political aspect of it, but just to lay the background for our viewers, how did you get a chance to testify, and what was it?
Mm. Well, actually, it was a very last-minute invitation. I was already in the trained for the counseling and de-radicalization. I got a call from Ottawa on Thursday that they would like me to appear on Monday. And I thought, it's too short a notice, I ain't going to do it.
Yeah.
But a couple of friends that I spoke to, they said, nah, you have to go. They've invited. So I was sent a list of questions, what they would ask about. So it was mostly very general about the community, their response to extremism, and how we are dealing with our youth and so forth. And so when I got there, however, the first person who spoke was I don't know how to even describe it, but he was attacking every Muslim organization, every mainstream Muslim organization, every leader. He took my name as well, while he knew very well I was in the room, and making allegations of supporting terrorism or being extremist ourselves, or and so all kinds of allegations were being thrown out, and names were being named, and I felt like, and there was no counter narrative except for a couple of senators who took him on, but most were just. Mm-hmm. Taking it on and were very congratulatory about it. My surprise was that I was sitting in a chamber of one of our highest chambers of our government, and there was no check and balance on what was being said and how this could be a platform for Islamophobes. But I patiently sat there. And then when my turn came to present, I did my statement, and then rest is history, I guess.
I don't know how you did it, but, you know, it's amazing that you're able to talk about it, so thank you for that. Let me know if this is uncomfortable and I can change the conversation, but I know that there was a comment made by Senator Lynn Baik. She mentioned that Muslims should stop being so thin-skinned in reference to extremism, and I know that in one of the articles you also mentioned that, you know, you felt bullied, it felt like it was an inquisition. Mm-hmm. So I guess how do you, because you mentioned earlier about, you know, having... dealing with the politics, being patient, not burning bridges. Mm-hmm. So what, when you spoke, given that this was your experience, what message were you trying to convey there?
It's very difficult because, you know, when you are speaking as a rep of a community, you're not speaking for yourself. So you have to think very fast and you have to think on your feet. And so she was not literally just calling me thin-skinned, she was calling the Muslim community thin-skinned. I can take when people say something to me, but you know, I believe in the power of faith. I had done my prayer and I had asked so many imams to pray for me, Shabir Ali being one of them, so that God will guide my tongue, and he did. Subhanallah, praise be to God. Mm-hmm. It was not that difficult at that time, when I haven't even watched my whole video yet, but my friends tell me that I was very calm.
I can tell. You did a great job.
You don't take it personally, and a lot of things had to be said at that point. That actually, when she started attacking me, that actually gave me the opportunity to respond to the person who had given the hearing before. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't planning to even entertain that, or, you know, we are told in the Quran that when you are faced with ignorance, you say salam and you walk away. So that was going to be my response, but she pushed it, and I knew that was the time to say what needed to be said. And I can say that there were senators who took it very well. They came and congratulated me after. I even got a call from Senator Mitchell, who again wanted to know how I was doing, and that I was did very well and very calm, and so it's good. And the media picked it up.
Yes.
I wasn't planning to talk about it, but I just got to the airport from the hearing, and CBC called, and they had all seen it, and so that was another opportunity.
Yes.
So you know, you can see them as something negative, or you can see it as an opportunity to put our case forward. And I think I also wanted our community to know that we can't always be afraid to speak up. This is a free country. This is my country. I love Canada, and I will not allow bullies to make us afraid of our democratic values. Because that's my strength.
I think you've answered. I'm speechless. I don't really know. I was going to ask a last question, but I think you answered it. But I guess for other people who are watching and who may, you know, I know I certainly am not, I don't know if I'm nearly half as confident as you are, but what advice do you have, you know, given this whole narrative that's going on in the media, you know, the whole issue with the niqab, headscarf issues that recently happened as well. What's your advice in terms of, you know, how we respond as a community, Muslim and non-Muslim, because I think there's a part for us as a community to play.
Yeah, my first advice really is that when we are dealing with media, let people who are trained in media to deal with it, number one. All of us can't do everything,
yes.
Right? So, and never approach a subject or a topic when you're angry or you're emotional about it. So calm yourself down and look at all sides of the equation. It's sometimes, and most of the times, things are not about black and white. They lie in the gray area, right? And your understanding may be different from an issue than mine because you're coming from a different perspective. So just because somebody's coming from a different perspective doesn't mean they are wrong. And this comes with age and experience.
Okay.
When I was younger, I don't know if I was that wise, but I still am not trying to be.
Is to be you're doing a good job.
I hope so. So we try to look at things from a different people's perspective. But one way to have that capacity is to work with different people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have isolated ourselves within our own community, and then within that, within our cultural community. So our minds are not, we have very tunnel vision in,
yes.
And when we're looking at things, because you're surrounded with people who are saying, yes, 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 that's it, that's right. I surround my people myself with people who challenge me, who critique me, and so I have friends from every community. So I think the ability to think critically, to analyze issues, and to be able to listen to the other are prime qualities that one needs to develop if they want to go into the media and into the public arena.
That was very informative. Thank you so much, Shahina.
You're welcome.